everyone. I'd like to welcome you to today's Open Systems Publishing eCast on Ready for Takeoff, using advanced development technologies to accelerate development of safe and secure systems. This eCast is hosted by Wind River and DDCI. My name is Jerry Gipper, Editorial Director for Embedded Computing Design, and I'll be moderating today's event. The creation of safe and secure embedded systems imposes exacting challenges for the architecture, implementation, and cost of systems. Our speakers today will discuss some trends and challenges you may face. They will also provide information on the real-time tools, services, and technologies needed to deliver devices requiring safety certification and/or multiple independent levels of security. In this live webcast, you'll also hear tips for accelerating development and containing costs using both traditional development language tools and real-time or safety-critical Java. Before we start, however, I'd like to point out a couple of items for you to note about your eCast viewer console. First, notice the Ask a Question button on the left. At the end of the presentation, we will address selected questions as time permits. You can submit your questions at any time during today's session. We may not get to all your questions, but we'll address them offline. If you have a question for a specific presenter, please indicate so in the question. Second, please notice the Full Screen Slides button at the bottom. This enlarges your view of the slides as they are presented and makes it easier for you to view the material. And third, today we'll have a couple of pop-up polls that will occur during the presentation. So if you have any pop-up blockers on your browser, please disable those so that you can participate in these polls. Our first speaker today is Chip Downing. Chip joined Wind River as a senior industry marketing manager for aerospace and defense in 2005. Prior to joining Wind River, Chip was VP of sales for Estrel Technologies, a company delivering SCADA, a design and development environment for safety-critical control systems. Prior to that, Chip led the sales, marketing, and consulting organizations at Validated Software, Encore Systems, and Mentor Graphics, Qualix Group, and Ready Systems. With that, Chip, I'm going to turn it over to you and let you start off the presentation today.
Thanks, Jerry. Once again, I'm Chip Downing from Wind River. I'd like to start off today talking about a few trends and challenges in this industry. Firstly, the first trend I'd like to talk about is just the trend toward compressed development and deployment cycles using multiple vendors. Traditionally, we've had somewhat lax and I'll say casual development cycles, typically from one vendor will provide one system. In today's environment, you have very compressed development cycles and deployment cycles, trying to get new aircraft in the air, but also new equipment to the embedded warfighter. So that trend of having one vendor deliver one box for one class of application now is going away. You now must work with multiple vendors to create one deployed platform. This forces a couple of challenges here. One, we used to have common development tools. We used to have singular development tools, and each vendor could supply any number of tools to accomplish this mission. Now you really need to have common development tools across the entire supply chain, where you can actually combine and leverage the efforts of all the different teams to create this one integrated product. You also have to, no longer can you develop new code for every new project. You now must leverage existing legacy code, whether it's C, C++, Ada, or other legacy code on the platform, and integrate that with new high productivity languages like Java. In addition, there's a higher demand for safety and security compliance using COTS implementation. Traditionally, each vendor used to create their own platform and certify that entire platform and pay 100% of the certification cost. Moving forward, we are creating platforms that vendors supply the certification evidence. Essentially, it's a COTS certification evidence. So as these complex systems get certified, 100% of the cost is not borne by each project, but just a percentage of that is for each deployed system. And finally, there's always a drive toward more functionality, more complexity in the systems. And this forces, of course, the higher, larger code sizes and higher functionality operating systems, increasing the complexity. Somehow you have to address this complexity, you must use COTS components. You can no longer create proprietary operating systems and hardware platforms. So what's needed to address this? So certainly you need to have a robust and proven real-time operating system. You need to have something that has ready-to-go DO-170B certification evidence that's readily accepted by certification officials. You also need to have an operating system that can support multiple vendors, multiple suppliers on one singular instance of silicon. In the aerospace industry, that standard for doing that is called ARINC 653. In addition, you need to have a MIL separation kernel for secure systems to combine different levels of security on the same microprocessor. In addition, you need to have an open multi-vendor development environment. Just having a closed single silicon, single vendor, single connection development tools are no longer valid in this new era of aerospace and defense development. And finally, you need to have a high productivity programming language to actually that is designed for real-time embedded to be able to generate this higher complexity and higher volume of code that's required to address these issues. So with Wind River, we've come up with a whole family of solutions to address this entire spectrum of requirements. If you take a look at the left-hand side, we have our Wind River VxWorks platform. This has been around for 25 years, VxWorks, and it just continues to get better and better. We also got a Wind River Linux solution, and that addresses folks trying to get the higher capabilities and complexity of Linux into deployed platforms. And then finally, we have the certified platforms, and that's what I'm going to focus on today. We've got a certified VxWorks platform, a certified VxWorks 653 platform, and then certified MILS, VxWorks MILS platform that stands for Multiple Independent Levels of Certification. But across all these platforms, you need to have one type of development environment, one way of debugging all these different applications. You no longer can have different development environments, one-off development environments for all these different types of systems. So with that in mind, Wind River adopted Eclipse about 5 years ago, and our version of Eclipse is called Workbench. Workbench combines all the open source capabilities of the Eclipse Foundation along with our own proprietary tools that together provide a very powerful combination to debug this whole range of operating systems, not just one operating system at one time or one type of silicon, but regardless of the type of silicon or operating system or connection into the system, you still have one development environment, one view for debugging this whole range of code. In addition, people tend to use different tools in different time frames of development, whether it's hardware bring up, application development, testing. Today with Eclipse, you can now plug in all these different capabilities from design and requirements all the way down to testing and deployment. So, you know, once again, you can have this one common development environment across this whole range of capabilities, plugging in any number of suppliers, where traditionally we'd have to do integrations from all these different suppliers. Today, that's not the case. We simply just get one common environment called Eclipse, use a plumbing, Eclipse plumbing, to use all these different tools in this development paradigm. So what I'd like to do next is go through our three platforms today, and the first one is VxWorks Cert. We've got two different flavors of our VxWorks Cert platform, 5 and 6. So the VxWorks 5.4 certification product has been around since 1999. It's proven on over 40 projects. It has a subset of VxWorks calls, but this tends to be a very robust subset for doing safety-critical programming. This subset includes over 200 system calls, including semaphores, queues, timers, a whole series of capabilities. This is all supported by our certification evidence DVD that I'll talk about here in a few more slides. Next, I'd like to talk about VxWorks 6. VxWorks 6 is our current implementation of VxWorks. It's a scalable operating system. We can go from a very small footprint to a much higher footprint. So with VxWorks 6, we've implemented essentially the certification. Let me see if this works here. The certification subset with VxWorks 5.4, it's approximately the same subset of system calls with our VxWorks 6 environment. This allows you to very easily migrate things going from VxWorks 5 into VxWorks 6. We've also added the capability of putting in the real-time processes, or essentially MMU protection, that's an integral part of our VxWorks platform. So what does this look like? Essentially, the certification platform looks very similar to our VxWorks 5.4 offering, full complement of system calls, semaphores, queues, et cetera, interrupts, and once again, it's supported with our certification evidence DVD. We will have RTP capabilities available in coming releases. Next, I'd like to talk about our VxWorks 6.5.3 product. This is the Wind River implementation of the Airing 6.5.3 specification. We worked hard with industry leaders Boeing and GE Aviation to create this product. So, to understand this product, you need to understand federated versus IMA. So, and typically, most traditional platforms on an aircraft are federated. Where essentially, you have separate systems all over an aircraft, each one of those requiring different power supplies, redundant CPUs, different failover strategies and high availability strategies. This works very well because each vendor has their own box that they can replace at any time. So you have these line replaceable units you can plug and play whenever you like to on an aircraft. The bad side of that is that each platform has its own box, and so they have both power constraints, you have size constraints, you have weight constraints. So to address this, the concept of integrated modular avionics has come on about, and this combines different capabilities on a single instance of silicon or a single, essentially, compute platform. So you can now take multiple compute capabilities and put that into one box on a system, therefore decreasing the size, weight, and power on any given aircraft. In fact, 787, that's estimated around 500 pounds, has been saved by reducing the number of federated systems on there and putting those onto a common core cabinet that has much better high availability and failover capabilities, redundancy, than you would get from a straight federated system. So what's this look like? So essentially, VxWorks 6.5.3 is a standard implementation of the Airing 6.5.3 specification. It allows multiple partitions to be scheduled on a strict time basis. Inside each of those partitions, you have a different application. It can be at a different certification level under DO-178B. So you see on the drawing in front of you, essentially you've got flight control systems, radar, graphics, et cetera, going on a single instance of silicon. Now, key here is that we have a partition scheduler running in kernel space that all it does is schedule these MMU-protected virtual compute environments on a strict time basis. And then gets completely out of the way and allows the application code running in user space to have 100% of the CPU. This is a key capability that must be enforced to make sure that you have good scalability and determinism, especially when you go in and start changing the configuration of your system. You want to make sure that this can be done very easily, and it will not affect, as you add more partitions, the determinism or scalability of your system. Now, the Airing spec just requires an Airing API. And in most cases, customers don't have Airing-ready software. So we actually created different types of APIs that you can run in user space inside each of these partitions. First one is a VxWorks API. So you can take legacy VxWorks code, mainly using that certification profile that we've done for 5, 4, and 6, and run that inside the partitions. We also have got a POSIX API, and also you can put in Ada, Java, and other language APIs inside these partitions, along with a proprietary or very sort of a bare-bones API in case you have a very small application that needs to run. this allows you to bring a lot of different capabilities onto this platform very quickly and then do the testing of that. Now, there's a lot of challenges that I won't be able to drill in today with VxWorks 6.5.3. There's a whole list of them here. They're essentially the challenges of host debug tools, target debug tools, application performance, application code migration. Everything's configured with XML. There's a whole slew of capabilities here that we can talk about at in a separate session. Feel free to contact us if you want to know about these things. But these are key challenges that must be addressed for you to be successful with an Airlink 6.5.3 solution, especially if it's complex, using multiple vendors, supplying software asynchronously to a platform. We also have got a certification stack, an IP stack for VxWorks 6.5.3. We have IPv4, UDP, and TCP available now with certification evidence. We have additional capabilities coming up here in the future. So if you need to bring a network into your system, that we have DL170B, Level A, certification evidence available for the stack. Now, evidence is somewhat unique. Traditionally, you're required to supply about 25 documents to the FAA or the certification authorities. With the way we do it with 6.5.3, we create a DVD with over 65,000 support files. So every piece of source code, all the build files, the qualified tools that we use, are all on this DVD. So there's just one, it's a one-stop shop. Instead of searching around through filing cabinets and paper documents, PDF documents, essentially spending a lot of time at your facility, you can just hand over this DVD to the certification authorities to review at their leisure, not at your site. So finally, I'd like to talk about the Mills product. Essentially, this is a new product for Wind River. Been working on this for about 3 years with various large partners, and we're now bringing this to market and a formal product. It'll be released early this summer for an early access release and next year for full product release. What is Mills? Essentially, Mills is very similar to Airlink 6.5.3, where you have a partitioned environment. So essentially, secure systems used to be, I'll say, federated, where you have different devices in one security domain, and you need to have dedicated hardware for each one of those devices in each domain. Mills allows you to actually combine these different secure domains and applications, one piece of silicon or one workstation. So it actually has essentially an integrated modular avionics type of concept of bringing in multiple applications onto one piece of silicon, and those applications could be provided from one or many vendors. So what does Mills look like? Essentially, it's a partition environment, just like VxWorks 6.5.3. Our 6.5.3 product, we had different operating system APIs inside the partitions. We have the same type of architecture here with our Mills product. We essentially have the concept of a guest OS inside each of these partitions. Down below that, of course, we have these partitions scheduled on a strict time basis, and this is configured with XML, both for the partition information, but also for the security policy information. So very quickly, you can deploy and change both the security policy and the configuration of the entire system using XML. You can take a look at the middle here. You also have got the concept of middleware, where different applications and even the different drivers for different capabilities can be put inside a separate partition and accessed in the time context of the calling partition. So you know, essentially you've got a library of routines inside middleware, inside its own protected partition, that you can now, once again, call in the time concept of a calling partition in the Mills environment. So it makes it very easy to debug. You can imagine trying to do this without use middleware without this type of capability of using the application code and time slot for actually calling that software. So to wrap up, essentially the safe and secure solution summary from Wind River, very quick overview of this solution space that we have. Essentially, it really talks about device requirements, where essentially I've got increased complexity, pressure to use commercial off-the-shelf components, and it's certainly converging safe and secure solutions. They're starting to look the same. You now need to come in with code from different vendors on a single instance of silicon or single hardware platform. There's also safety requirements as far as the cost efficiency there. Instead of the burden of 100% of a safety certification, this is now being shared across multiple vendors using a common operating system and hardware development environment. We've also, by doing this, of course, that you have a lot of people looking at the same code for safety situations, so the quality of this package tends to go higher and higher. And so for device software optimization mandate, essentially it's no longer a choice not to use standardization or industry standards. You must use standards. You must use COTS. You really need to have a strategy to have wider choice and flexibility and reliability. And certainly this all deals with higher product quality. It results in products that are used across many different programs and platforms, and just by default it comes up with higher quality. And then the safety process, essentially it's a standard product release is using standard support cycles and using processes that create software typically at a much higher level of quality than traditional real-time operating system software components. And certainly, at Wind River, we can back this up with a very large professional services team of over 400 engineers. So that's it for my quick overview of these systems.
Okay, thanks, Chip. Before we introduce David, I've got a question I'd like to ask right now on the second to last slide that you presented with the VxWorks Mills architecture.
Uh-huh.
Is that actually like a virtualization environment or a hypervisor type of environment that you're talking about there? Because those are common terms that people are using these days.
Right. That Mills separation kernels really has the same type of functionality as a hypervisor. Only
okay.
It really has a way to also enforce security policies that are defined in XML.
So is that actually then a VxWorks kernel, like a stripped-down kernel or something?
It's not quite a kernel. It's more like a partition scheduler that allows you to, of course, in the future, incorporate things like virtual boards, virtual execution environments, and also multi-core environments.
Okay, and then you can stack the different, as you show in your diagram, you can stack the different environments in the user mode on top of all of that then.
That is correct.
Okay. Just want to make sure I understood that. You didn't mention those words, and I see those mentioned a lot in the industry, and I want to make sure I was understanding.
Yeah,
okay,
if I do this in 20 minutes, it's a little challenging to talk about all the terms. And
yeah, hyper speed. Well, thank you, and I'm sure we'll have a few questions here, other questions at the wrap-up. Next up is David Mosley. He's a senior software engineer for DDCI. Who is a software development tools company with a primary focus on safety-critical embedded applications. During his 15-year career at DDCI, David has led many product development teams and has held various management and corporate positions. Prior to joining DDCI, David worked in a compiler development at Motorola, Bull, and Honeywell Air Transport Division. David will be talking to us today about the accelerated development of safe and secure systems. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to you for a bit, David.
Hello, everybody. Very glad to be here. Thank you, Jerry. As Jerry said, we're talking about the safe and secure development for applications. Going back to the slide that Chip put up earlier, talking about the challenges that we're seeing and the various trends that are out there, we're looking primarily from a DDCI standpoint as providing some of these tools that are being used in the development of these safe and secure applications, primarily the languages. DDCI has long been a software provider of various compilers and other tools. And we're also looking at how our tools are going to fit into the larger scheme, particularly with real-time operating systems and other testing and development tools, environments that you might want to encounter. What's needed slide, again, we're looking at the primary, the last couple of bullets, the multi-vendor development environment. DDCI has integrated its products with a number of different developers, testing tools, for example. And we're always focusing on the high productivity of programming languages. We've been a longtime supporter of the Ada programming language. We're coming up on the new languages of Java, real-time, and safety-critical Java. And we've always advocated that there be mature development processes, and we have various CMM processes in effect here. So focusing in on the safe and secure systems, basically we're talking mission-critical or safety-critical systems. And the questions we have is, what are some of these key attributes that we have to have that these applications share in common? Well, the first one, and probably the key one, is the testability of the application. These are applications that are going to have to be reviewed for testing to make sure that we have tested at some level. Typically, for DO-178B, level A, we're talking MCDC coverage, modified condition decision coverage. Sometimes testing is at the source level, statement level, for example. The next attribute that really needs to come in here is determinism and predictability. These applications often are meeting hard deadlines and hard schedules, and you have to be able to be certain that each time through you're going to be able to complete your work in the allotted time and that your result will always come out to be the same. And as Chip was talking about, with putting more and more stuff on silicon, we've got to be working in a concurrent multi-processing, multi-thread environment today. Too many things are happening at one time that you're going to have to be able to respond to multiple inputs almost simultaneously. Now, the choice of language that you select has some impact on the testability and determinism and so on. And in fact, at DDCI, we have long supported Ada as a primary language, and we've noticed that other people are beginning to move away from Ada, and they've chosen other languages, oftentimes that don't really meet all of the key components or needs for a safe and secure application. And as a result, they've been forced to implement coding standards, if you will, that will come along and enforce, hopefully with some automated tools, other times just with code reviews, that certain coding standards are followed just so we can guarantee that we have these testability deterministic sort of applications. The development of the Joint Strike Fighter, for example, they've chosen C++ as their development language, but in fact have adopted a very rigid set of coding standards, which excludes a lot of the things from C++ that might impact or cause these issues to be harder to handle. So current embedded languages that we see today, as I mentioned, Ada was the first real standardized language that was developed for embedded, safe, and secure systems. And alternatives to Ada have always been, for example, C, which is basically a high-level assembly language. You certainly can get down and do a lot of stuff at a low level with the C language, but unfortunately, you also bring in some risk when you go down to that level. C++ has become on as a strong contender. It's a fairly complex language, however, and even though it's gone with object-oriented features, which Ada has also adopted, by the way, there's a lot of concerns about some of the overheads and some of the same problems that existed in C are also inherited in C++. Now, Java is a relatively newcomer to this group. It's been basically around for a little over a decade, and it's basically becoming a very more current and modern language and is often the language of choice. other tools that there are out there that you might want to be considering, there are, for example, UML tools that allow you to develop your applications using UML diagrams, and then hopefully there's an automatic code generation capability that will automatically generate the code. A lot of these UML tools also support reverse engineering so that changes to the code can be backed into the UML diagrams. And these are somewhat, there's a somewhat of a controversy or conflict over how much benefit you get from UML tools, because a lot of the code is actually still going to be written by hand. Other technologies include formal methods. And by that, we're looking at some sort of mathematical-based method of examining the specification and verifying that you have a correctness. And this is becoming more and more important, especially because of the Mills ratings. And then another option is rapid prototyping tools. There are various techniques and tools for doing this. The agile programming techniques are often based on the idea of doing rapid prototyping and doing frequent releases of your product. And there are other tools as well that you can apply. DDCI is primarily focused on the languages, so we'll jump back to that. For the embedded languages, we have a number of features and the corresponding benefits that are associated with it. For example, when you're looking at a language for an embedded application, you would like to pick something that's been standardized, because that will give you then a common set of features across a variety of platforms. So if you're thinking of migrating to a different platform or to a different processor, you can rely on some of the standardizations in order to make that migration much easier. As I mentioned earlier, multitasking is an important part. You have multiple simultaneous events occurring, so you need a language that's going to be able to handle that. Over the last few decades, object-oriented programming has been recognized as a way to create more understandable programs. And more understandable programs will then impact you later on under the maintainability section. Obviously, for reducing your cost, code reuse is a key component. There's no point in reinventing things that are already done. Your software doesn't rust while sitting on a hard drive. Your software is going to be good for years and years. You just need to be able to update it and incorporate it into other applications along the way. And finally, related to that is the ability to interface other languages. Each language typically, it views itself as its own universe, but that's realistically not what's going on. There are going to be other languages, other libraries, and so on that you're going to want to take advantage of for cost reuse, for reuse, and so on. So we need to have the ability to mix the old and new languages together. And finally, as I mentioned, maintainability. Our applications, particularly in the embedded safety and secure environment, are often out there for very extended periods of time, decades. So you're looking at maintenance as a long-term, ongoing effort that will be always a factor in your choice. Comparing the languages, I've selected some of the most common features. C++ includes most of the features of C, so I've just put in one category in C++. All of the languages, C++, Java, and Ada, have, for example, object-oriented features. They all offer means for handling exceptions and for creating templates or generics. They have ways of encapsulating or protecting names with packages or namespaces. Ada and Java have also extended the concept of doing more in the way of runtime checking, particularly in the case of arrays. With C++, there's no checking that takes place for the bounds of an array, while both Java and Ada offer you that capability. And Java and Ada also have very strong runtime environments already designated as part of the standards, essentially. And Java and Ada also have support for concurrency built into the language itself. Now, for the heap, it's interesting. Both C++ and Ada offer you the ability to create things out of the heap, which means basically pointers, which is possibly a good or bad thing, depending on your state of the of mind on that. And both Java and Ada actually offer you a garbage collector. Now, none of the Ada applications, vendors actually, implementations of Ada, have actually really implemented a garbage collector anywhere on the scale that Java does it. At best, an Ada Java garbage collector will basically coalesce a couple of the free sections in the heap into one larger piece. But that it doesn't go through any process of marking or sweeping through the heap to try to find things which are no longer referenced. So garbage collection in Java is a whole another level. Now, Ada was the original design for safety critical language. It was created for the U.S. Department of Defense after they did a number of studies in the 1970s, which is, you know, eons ago, to look at ways of improving the software development. They had found that there were over 200 different languages were being used in various Department of Defense applications. So they wanted to focus on a single language, which they thought would give them a number of benefits. And primarily Ada has been in that domain ever since, in the defense and avionics applications. But today developers are looking for alternatives to Ada for a number of reasons. Ada was just never widely adopted outside of the DoD and avionics markets. And there's some debate as to why this may have happened. Cost may have been a factor. One of the initial things with Ada was that the Department of Defense came out and said, okay, there will be no subsets for Ada. And the result was we had large, complete compilers that handled everything as dictated by the Department of Defense, but were not particularly efficient. As years went by, of course, Ada efficiency improved, and it's now comparable to any other languages. But at the beginning, it had a bad flavor, especially back in the 80s whenever memory was tight and processors were not as fast as we have today. So there was still concerns about the size. And even though Ada was designed for real-time and embedded, there were some suspect features about Ada for real-time. And finally, in 1997, the Department of Defense basically said, well, we're not going to force anybody to use Ada anymore, and the Ada mandate was repealed. And over the last decade or so, the Ada programmers have become more and more scarce. There are very few universities today that are actually teaching Ada as the primary language. Most of them actually moved over to Java, of course. And as the years have gone by, the experienced programmers are leaving the field or switching to other languages. In any case, projects today are typically facing problems with staffing Ada-related projects. So the new language that is coming along is the embedded applications. It's going to be real-time Java. Java is standardized, and it has object-oriented programming. It has templates. It supports, obviously, concurrency. For interfacing to other languages, Java supports the so-called native interface. And this is somewhat cumbersome and not easily utilized, but DDCI has been working on that, and we'll talk a bit about that in a minute. Java is obviously widely deployed. As I said, it's used all through universities. The number of Java engineers and software programmers out there is very, very large. And you can also scale your Java applications depending on the language you select. And something new that's coming along with safety critical Java is going to be annotations in the language that can be used for verifying the application, especially for the MIL's security issues. So, can Java really fill the embedded role, though? Well, of course, things have gotten a lot looser than they were in the 80s. We've got processors which are much more capable. Memory is much more abundant and cheap. So those things aren't totally gone away. And there are still some size concerns, for example, for Java. Java has with it this Java virtual machine, which is going to be part of the runtime system and is going to be sitting there interpreting bytecodes. That's kind of the scheme for original Java. Now, since that the original language came out, they've made a lot of improvements to the virtual machine. We now have what we call just-in-time compilation taking place that will examine the bytecodes, and for sessions of code that are used frequently, those will get converted by this just-in-time compiler into the native code. So the performance of Java is getting quite respectable. However, you know, you're talking about including on your embedded application a just-in-time compiler as part of the interpreter as well. One of the other features of Java that is very nice is the ability to dynamically load various class libraries as needed, so that applications as they're distributed are quite small. So this capability is nice when you're talking about submitting something across the web, but for an embedded application, we're going to have to resolve this issue of being able to dynamically load these class libraries. And finally, and what we'll be talking about quite a bit in a few minutes, is what about determinism? I mean, there's this big garbage collector that Java has. Is that going to mess up my predictability, and am I going to miss my deadlines? So those are issues that need to be addressed before Java can really fill the embedded role. So let's focus first on real-time with hard deadlines. How are we going to handle that? Well, the biggest barrier to that is going to be garbage collection. Typically with a garbage collector, the way it typically works in Java applications is various classes and arrays are created out of the heap. And these references are not freed up by any mechanism within the Java application. So at some point in time, the Java environment will go through the act of gathering up all the pieces that are no longer referenced and cleaning them up and making them available to other people. And while the garbage collection is going on, basically everything, all the other threads come to a screeching halt. So we need to have a way of making this more predictable and providing deterministic behavior. And so back in like 1990, and it was revised later on, the real-time specification of Java was created. And it is important to note that it is not really, it doesn't change the Java language, because it uses the Java's language's definition for classes and interface to create the real-time features. So what have they done? Well, some of the key issues, there's more than three things they've done, but the key ones are they've added a couple of different classes of memory. They've added an immortal memory, which, based on its name, is immortal and it never goes away. And there's also scoped memory, which is memory which is more limited, and it comes in one large lump, similar to like a stack-oriented architecture. And finally, they've added so-called real-time threads. So the key things are objects that are in immortal memory, that use immortal memory or scoped memory, these are not going to be subject to garbage collection. So if you structure your program correctly, then the key threads that need to be their memory allocations and their memory references and so on won't be interrupted by garbage collection. And the final key thing is that the real-time threads that have to meet these deadlines, they've given a higher priority than the garbage collector. So when your application is running, your key deadline impacted threads are running at a higher priority than the garbage collection, and they're not using memory that is going to be used, be gathered up by the garbage collector in any case. Alternative approach to handling real-time Java was developed ages ago, back in 1978, by Extra Dijkstra. And his idea was, well, instead of just waiting for one moment, let's do a little bit of garbage collection along the way. So each garbage collection unit, if we can call it a garbage collection unit, looks at a finite size piece of memory. And each memory allocation will perform a number of garbage will handle a number of garbage collection units. So each time your program says, oh, I need a new piece of memory, while it's getting that new piece of memory, it may do one or two or three units of garbage collection. So as you get more and more, as you start allocating more and more memory, more and more garbage collection will have. Eventually your program will reach a steady state between the amount of garbage collection that's going on and the as you access memory. Now this, because we've split up the garbage collection across everything into small, predictable size pieces, now the entire program is now deterministic. And DDCLI has a variation of this, which we call Scorpion real-time Java, that supports this real-time garbage collection. The other advantage to that is the whole program is now real-time, and even though we also support real-time concepts such as immortal memory and scoped memory, it's easier now to write a real-time application because of the real-time garbage collection. Coming next, and still under development and still being debated, is going to be the next advance in Java, safety-critical Java. And safety-critical Java is mostly a subset of the real-time Java. There are a couple of key features that are going to be slightly different, hence the real-time, the safety-critical Java circle is a little bit outside the real-time Java. And anyway, this is being set up by an expert group, the JSR, which is under the Java community process, group number 302, and the mission there is to create a subset of the real-time Java that's going to be suitable for all these safety-critical applications, especially those that are going to require some sort of FAA DO-178B certification or others. And basically, as it says here, that we're looking at trimming out or cutting down to the essentials in order to simplify the testing. Similar to the way that Chip was talking about the VxWorks cert, they've limited set of functions that are that are approved as part of the certification. Same sort of a concept will carry over to safety-critical Java. So safety-critical Java requires the testability and the deterministic behavior. So the testability is the key feature here. You're not going to be able to have a large Java virtual memory runtime environment, if you will. Likely, there will be no garbage collection that will be allowed. You won't have to be. You can't certify a just-in-time compiler. So we're looking at ahead-of-time compiler compilation will also be needed. And as for the libraries, the dynamic loading of these class libraries is not going to be allowed. So there will be a subset of the Java libraries which will be allowed, and they'll be linked in statically within the program, so it won't be dynamic. And these libraries will also have to be certified. The certification of safety-critical Java is the runtime, which is not going to be a virtual machine, will be tested by the safety-critical Java suppliers. And as I mentioned, we have some restrictions here of no interpreting, no garbage collection, and so on. Limited set of class libraries. We're still having multi-thread support, though. So the certification efforts of safety-critical Java will not be trivial. I mean, certifying multi-thread applications is a bit tricky. And then the actual development, the actual application, then will have to be tested by the developers. And the ahead-of-time compilation will allow you to have traceability from the Java code straight to the native code. For security, I just mentioned that the DO-178B level A is equivalent to the EAL level 4. That's where you have to methodically design, test, and have it reviewed. Also, if we're looking during that DO-178B, we'll also be talking about the security functions always, so I'm sure that will happen. And as I mentioned, safety-critical Java will have annotations, which will allow more formal methods all the way up to EAL level 7. The tools that DDCI provides, for example, SCORE or ADA and our Scorpion Java, These are both plug-ins that will work in a workbench, Wind River workbench environment based on the Eclipse framework. And for mixed language, as I mentioned, that we have developed a software wizard for the advanced mixed language integration, affectionately known as the WAMI, that automatically will help generate those Java native interfaces that will take you to the native other languages. Cost, of course, the ability to mix Java with other legacy code will help reduce costs. The legacy code is reused, so that's an expense you don't bear, and the new functions are now written in Java, where you have a lot of expertise in the market with engineers, so that the creating of the Java parts will be much simpler. And real-time, I should mention real-time Java and safety-critical Java are typically based on a POSIX-based real-time operating system, such as VxWorks. So oftentimes, safety-critical real-time Java is targeted towards a VxWorks application. So in conclusion, I will just mention that these two variants of Java with VxWorks are going to be viable alternatives and can speed up your application development, whether it's an embedded, real-time, safety-critical, or high-assurance sort of application. And, I guess we've come to the questions, and I'll put in a plug here that we are going to be talking a lot about Ada and Java and Ada to Java migrations and so on at an upcoming webinar in July. It says to register now, but that's not quite true. But you can go to our website and check it out. So I think that takes us to the end. So, Jerry, back to you.
Well, thanks, David. One question I have is how long before we'll see safety-critical Java, do you think?
Well, that's a good question. Currently, the draft is still under preparation. The original schedule, of course, called for it to be out over a year ago. But the final draft is going to be reviewed at the end of July. And it's very likely that that draft will go out for public comment to everybody. So it's coming. It's getting fairly close. But I would say it's probably at least a year away for a full settlement of the standard and adoption of the standard, and then the Java implementations will then follow shortly after that.
Are you seeing a lot of vendors moving from Ada to Java right now? Is the migration started? How strong is it? Any comments?
Well, we haven't seen a whole lot of Ada vendors moving away from Ada. There's just too much Ada code out there, and it's just significant amounts. We are seeing, however, that a lot of these companies are moving to the mixed language environment. They're maintaining their Ada applications, but they're moving on new development over to Java. So new functionalities are coming in Java all the time. Simulations, for example, has gone to a lot of Java already today.
Okay. Here's a question that's just come in from the audience on garbage collection and just-in-time compilation. Can those slow down an embedded process or interfere with the real-time reaction to a given input or the determinism of the system? Is it suggested that you might use a little bit more CPU horsepower for a given application?
Well, definitely the real-time Java collection, garbage collection does take up some of the CPU cycles. So if you have a very, very tight deadline, then you'd likely to want to pick structure your program slightly differently so that you're using more of the immortal memory, the stuff that doesn't have the garbage collection associated with it. But in general, you can use the real-time garbage collection, understanding that there's a slight penalty that gets paid for every memory allocation that happens.
Right.
And once you've taken that into account, you can handle your deadlines appropriately.
Okay.
Or meet the deadlines.
Okay. I'll flip a couple questions over to Chip here. Chip, it's kind of a follow-on to the question I asked you there at the transition. What guest OSs are supported in the VxWorks Mills environment?
So with this type of virtualization architecture, you can host almost any type of guest OS in those partitions. Initially, we'll be using our VxWorks guest OS, followed by Linux, followed by ARINC 6x3, our VxWorks 6x3 product. We also have got a essentially bare metal API, so if you want to put a very small application and possibly your own RTOS inside one of those partitions, you can do that also.
Okay. Is the VxWorks 653 product shipping now? And if so, roughly how many projects, airframes, is that being used on?
So right now, VxWorks 6x3 is shipping. We have over 100 projects now using VxWorks 6x3. We have over 70 customers, and we have over 35 airframes now using that product. So it's a very, very successful product, and certainly one that's only been on the market a fairly short time. So it's probably one of Wind River's most successful products ever.
Good traction, it sounds like. David, a question for you. It's back to the garbage collection. A lot of questions in that area here. Once you take just-in-time compiling and the garbage collection capabilities out of Java, what's the benefit of that over C, C++?
Well, the key advantage is that C and C++ still have pointers. They still have memory references and so on. Their memory allocations are then handled by the application or the programmer. Oftentimes we have you're faced with memory leaks or mishandling of data that's passed around with pointers. With Java, you have references, but these are all embedded within the class declarations. So you have a safer environment where you don't have the safety concerns about the way the pointers and memory allocations are taking place.
Okay. Another question that's come in is there any effort towards any of the IEC 61508 functional safety of electronic safety related systems? Is there any effort? Does that question make sense to you?
Yes, it does. This is Chip, and already we've used our existing DO-170B certification evidence slightly modified to address IEC 61508 environments. And looking forward, I'll see a merging of those requirements and certainly a documentation for both DO-170B and IEC 61508 coming out. So if you have 61508 certification requirements, the existing package can be used to address that.
Okay. And Chip, back to you too. Is what's the process for recertifying an update to a specific application inside of VxWorks' 653 partition?
Instead of certify the entire platform like you would on a normal RTOS environment and one that's not been robustly proven, with VxWorks 6.5.3, you only have to recertify or retest the scope of what you just changed. So if you just change one application and it may communicate with another partition, you have to test both those partitions and those applications. In other cases, if you just have a standalone application, you don't have to test the one application. That's a real key capability because in most cases, unless you have proven that you have a very robust partitioning and containment of errors on these mixed platforms, you'll end up recertifying the entire platform every time you change any line of code in any partition or the configuration information or in intermills environment security policies.
Okay. A couple of questions to you, David, on the area of testing in the Java environment, it looks like. Aren't runtime checks in the code a problem for testing?
There's some question about that. Various authorities, like the FAA, for example, with DO-170B, are very big on talking about traceability and particularly direct traceability, wherein anything that's in the source code can be directly traced to something that shows up in the object or the native code. And runtime checks are one of those things that don't meet that criteria for direct traceability. Suddenly there's now you have an assignment and suddenly there's a check that's also associated with the assignment that wasn't in the source code. So in that sense, yes, there is that problem. Most of these systems, DDCI, for example, we offer the ability to turn off these checks. We're never very happy about this idea just because we think it doesn't make the code as safe as it could be, or as robust, I guess, as it should be. But it does enable you to do the direct traceability you need to do the testing that they want. So the answer is basically, yes, that is a problem, but there are ways you can mitigate that.
How about tools to help automate the testing process?
Well, there are a lot of tools available for Java testing. Just to name a couple of them, there's some open source ones like JUnit. There's also things called JProbe. There's a Java test coverage tool from Semantic Designs and so on. So there are a number of tools that are available that have been used for a number of years for testing Java applications.
Okay. I think we're down to the last question here, and I'm going to throw this one to you, Chip. I'm not sure I quite understand the whole question myself, but they're asking, could a development partner hold up your product development in order to help another of his partners get to market quicker?
So I think if you're talking about, two application developers with something like VxWorks 6.5.3 or VxWorks Mills, that's really not the case. You can supply the application code asynchronously into the build environment to the systems integrator.
Uh-huh.
Right, because of this capability, if we have this independent configuration build partitioning built into the system, we can be somewhat independent of supplying software. And if someone needs to back off and work with another partner that's on the same platform, they can go off and do that. Obviously, it's just that one partition or the one application will be delayed or affected. That's obviously, if there's other applications dependent upon that partition, that scope expands. But in most cases, the answer is not really. You can peel off and help partners that are running into trouble very quickly and not affect the entire program.
Okay. Well, I think we're running out of time here, and I think we've gone through the questions pretty good. What I'd like to do is wrap it up. Thank you both, Chip and David, for the presentation today. Great stuff.
Thank you, Jerry.
Today's event and previous eCasts from Open Systems Publishing are archived on our website. The archived eCasts and podcasts can be replayed at your convenience, and today's event will be available very shortly. I'd like to thank all the presenters for today's eCast. Hopefully the audience found this information helpful and make future design decisions. I know I learned a lot today. I'd also like to thank you, the audience, for your participation in today's eCast. I invite you to return for future events and pass the word to others who might benefit from this type of information. On behalf of Open Systems Publishing from Disneyland, I'd like to have you all to have a great day.